Some 0-0 draws provide very little to talk about, so thank God for Tyrone Mings attempting his own Mortal Kombat finisher on Nelson Oliveira's face in an act which has very much split the footballing world and will feature in episode 183 of the Tyler Sen podcast. Welcome to that. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, as per usual, and joining me on this fine Tuesday morning, actually, just about, is Alan Westy West. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you. Not only is it split the footballing world, it split his face as well, which was one of the nastiest injuries I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, it was a really interesting one, and there's a lot to discuss about it. We'll do that a bit later. I don't want to get into it too much in the intro, because I do want to mention that the Star Fans Forum is taking place towards the end of the month. I think it's on the 28th, a Thursday evening, with Jose Gomez. And a quick plug for that, members can get in for free, and people turning up on the night will be have to join Star for that at the Medeski Stadium. So an interesting little event there with Jose Gomez, who's fast becoming a bit of a fan's favourite at the moment.
He's very good at saying the right things, I've found. He does seem to praise the fans quite a lot, and he's getting the support of the players from what we're told from the inside. He says the right things, but we need to start getting some results.
Yes, that is very much the be-all and end-all, really, isn't it? It's all well and good having a nice manager, but having a nice manager in League One isn't quite what we're here for.
I'd rather have a nasty winning manager.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of those. We tend to dislike those, don't we? A certain Mr. Warnock speaks to mind. But nonetheless, let's get into the 0-0 draw with Villa in the recap.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right then, 0-0. Against Villa on Saturday night. Let's throw some stats into our current position. 1 point off safety, 12 points from 18th, 22 points from the playoffs, for those still of that mind, and we're 7 clear of the bottom. Westy, this is a game that I was kind of fearful we were going to lose going into it. A lot of the predictions on the Tyler Sten were of defeat. Didn't get beat, clean sheet. You know, very much a case that could have been worse.
I quite enjoyed it for a 0-0, to be honest. I thought Reading played relatively well. I thought they was in the game without being on top for any large period of time. But I thought Villa didn't give us too many problems, and I think they're probably the third top goal scorers in the Championship.
Yeah.
So to keep them out, I think you can only say that's an improvement, and it's been a well-earned improvement. And although I think we've only got 6 points from 21 so far under Gomez, something like that, which is not a great return, it's still relegation form. I think everyone's quite hopeful and optimistic, which is quite a surprise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, we are the third team that's kept Villa at bay this season. QPR and Wigan, the other two, both when Villa have been on the road. In terms of the stats, we're beaten on shots, 7-13. We're also beaten in tackles, but we won the possession battle, if you like, and won also more aerial duels. So this one, I think it's difficult because Villa are a very decent team in terms of their personnel, but they're playing below par for that. We're also perhaps a very decent team in terms of personnel who are playing below par. And, you know, it just feels like coming out with a point after the Bolton game, which was a huge disappointment because in the last minute, it just kind of keeps things a bit consistent in a way.
Yeah. I think the good thing about it was they never sort of overrun us at any stage. They could have had a couple of goals, let's face it. I thought Martinez made a good save near the end. Abrahams probably should have scored that header to come back to him when he had a rebound off the goalkeeper. But other than that, and well, the crossbar as well, but other than that, really, I wasn't nervous that they was going to score, if that makes sense. I think normally we sit at home 10, 15 minutes left thinking,
hanging on,
when's the goal coming? Yeah,
Sheffield United was very much like that.
But even when 8 minutes went up, I didn't think they're going to score at any stage. I thought a 0-0 draw was a fair result.
Yeah, tactically, Gomez is having a lot of consistency at the moment. We're very much sticking with the 4-2-3-1. Bit of a lineup rotation, however. Ajaria, Baker, Harriet and Blackett came in. Compared to the Bolton game, where I thought Barrow looked a bit dangerous, Aluka had a couple chances. We're changing personnel quite a lot, and I'm not entirely sure. I mean, Ajaria, I wasn't at the game, so I was working, but Ajaria sounds like I had a good game. Baker and Harriet, however, kind of not quite on song, and changing the... If you're going to have such a creative, you know, possession-based team, you perhaps need to have a bit more consistency in terms of personnel so players can click a bit more and link up better.
Do you know what's made me laugh, you know, said about the manager saying the right things and sort of bigging everyone up at a good when he had the opportunity? One of these quotes recently, which was quite funny looking back at the team selection this week, was it's not about the players that are coming in, it's about the players already here that need to change this around. Then he sold two of them and put five of his loanees in the side. So clearly it is about the players coming in, not so much about the players that have already been here. That did make me laugh. Ajaria, I thought on a day he sort of grew into the game. Still looked a bit light to me. He looks a bit light in midfield. I think when I've been on here before, I've said I think our biggest problem over the last 2 years has been the central midfield. And I think he's recognised this as well. Hence, there's been so many changes in that area the last couple of weeks. And we have stopped conceding goals. And I always said that would happen. If you sort the midfield out, central midfield, it's not the defence so much.
Yeah.
Either you had a Lloris in there and you had and the guy you come in, Meazza. I don't think it was the centre backs that was our worry, it was the midfield. And he certainly looked at solving that problem by filling it up with three and then moving Bakuna out. Harry, I thought he was poor really during the game, whether he was not match fit or he's not ready yet completely. It's surprising me sometimes, he's not so much his lineups, but his substitutions. Because I thought there was a real odd one this week with Omar Richards coming in on the left side when he had McCleary and Barrow sat on the bench. I thought that was strange.
Yeah, and Gomez seems to very much like... I remember when McDermott, his go-to plan when we wanted to have more tack was to move Makanoff into middle and put Robson Kana on. And Gomez's version of that is move Rinomota to right back and then we can, you know, drop Swift into a bit more of a deeper role and play around things like that. So he does have an interesting idea of how to sort of ratchet the game up. And especially when you are 0-0, I don't know if he was signed of mind with bringing Richards on just to kind of sit on it almost and just make sure at the very least we get a clean sheet.
Maybe he thought that, but I just thought we lacked a bit of creativity. I mean, Olivier didn't have many opportunities to score. If he had one that you get from just about 12, 13 yards out, the goalkeeper saved. But other than that, he didn't get too much of a break in the centre there. And I just thought maybe Barrow and McCleary would have been a better option, especially McCleary, because you know he can defend as well as attack.
Yeah.
And I just thought with 20 minutes to 25 minutes to go, it might have been a better option. Again, we got the draw. Maybe it would have been different. Who knows? But I think it was the last game we had, he made some weird substitution as well that I was quite surprised about. Can't remember off the top of my head, but again, his substitutions are a bit random at times.
Yeah, the Tyler Send ratings for the game, Yakimete, John Swift, Baker, Harry and Richards all got fives from Sim, who did them. Martinez, Mort, Ajari got sevens, eight from Miazga. And I want to pick up on Martinez, actually, because his saves were, you know, vital in getting the point. Seems to be able to play with his feet as well. Is it the case that, I mean, for the first time since Ali Alhabsi, that we've actually got a goalkeeper that we can trust?
I think, looking at Martinez, you can see why he's at Arsenal. I think he's definitely a step up on the goalkeepers we've got, which isn't overly hard, but he is a step up. And I think if you're bringing players in that you want to make immediate impacts, I think at least three of those loanees have already done that.
Yeah, Miazga looking good. What is it, do you think, that actually makes him a bit better than Lloris, because he's kind of the same sort of shape? He's not a massively bulky centre back, is he? He's kind of a bit more lanky. And
I just think sometimes with Lloris and Moore at the centre there, they don't win all the headers they should. I think we've noticed it when O'Shea's played and he doesn't miss a lot in the air, despite the fact his legs are gone. I think it takes a lot of pressure off the rest of the defence if you've got a centre back who can win the ball. He won most of it, but to be fair about him, he didn't stand out, but he was quietly good, you know what I mean? He didn't make any mistakes, he was steady. He could have scored when the ball was saved and the mate cleared it from his foot. I just think he looked like a step up from what we've had, and again, his youth and his legs, and hope his enthusiasm will be something that we can draw upon for the next 17 games or so we've got left.
Yeah, that's the very least I think you get from a player who you've bought. Obviously, we've had, you know, a lot of players come down from the Premier League, such as Mo Barrow and stuff, who weren't getting games in Premier League, came down and weren't, you know, consistent necessarily. But when you get players like Miazga and Martinez who are still wanted by the Premier League team in so much as they still actually, you know, assigned to the club permanently, you do get that sort of sense as to this is why Chelsea signed him, this is why Arsenal signed him. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at the moment.
Well, that's definitely it. I mean, when you're speaking about Barrow at Swansea, we're talking about players that are Arsenal and Chelsea. And that's a definite level up. And although they might not make it there, they obviously think that they could. Be up to them to prove it, won't it?
Yeah, well, let's hear from Jose Gomez himself then. The Reading manager spoke to the club after the game and we're going to play his quotes now.
In the first half, we played better. I can say better because we play under our process. In the second half, we start playing like a typical championship team. More direct football, trying to win the second balls, and in this kind of football sometimes the opponents can be stronger than us, but in this game we show that we are able to fight in this style, under this style as well. So we must be pleased for what the way that the players fight and the spirit that they show on the pitch.
Let's get on to what has emerged as quite the big issue of the game, and that is the Ming's stamp slash trip slash Mortal Kombat finisher on Nelson Oliveira. What was your take on it at the time? Because I was speaking to my dad at the game, and he kind of didn't really notice it as an incident so much because the referee didn't stop play, and it was kind of a bit of a confusion as to what had actually happened. It's only really since the replays have come out and the one particular slow-mo one, people have started to make assumptions on it.
Well, at the time, it looked to me like it was a foul anyway before he caught him in the face. Mm. He definitely was pulled back, then tripped. And then when he was on the floor, obviously he made contact with him. At the time, that was my thought on the whole thing. I thought, yeah, well, we should have had a free kick. Mm. I didn't think he caught him in the face to that level. He doesn't help himself always because he does tend to go down sometimes a bit easy. And I think the referee thought the same thing. Since then, I've seen the replay. I can't believe we didn't get a free kick in some way or form. And the other thing that's upset me about it is the fact they can't take retrospective action.
Yeah.
But ironically, sort of next year when you've got video referees, they'll be able to look back at incidents because they've been missed. A clear and obvious mistake, which that clearly was. When a player gets up with three cuts on his face and a broken nose, you've got to think to yourself, maybe I should have given him a free kick there.
Yeah, it's kind of, if that's not worth a free kick at the very least, you kind of think, yeah, well, if it's, you know, it's clumsy, obviously, for Mings. And in terms of that, it's a free kick. And whether you want to, you know, send him off because of the damage he's caused or have retrospective action, then you can work that out. But the retrospective action rules are that if the referee saw the incident, then that is, you know, the be-all and end-all. It's done. Because they used to have it where if the referee didn't see the incident, therefore it couldn't be done because...
Yeah, but if he would have seen the incident, surely he would have given a free kick.
And he, well, if he... Yeah, and he did see the incident and he got it wrong. So yeah, can the FA not say, all right, fair enough, you got it wrong, let's at least look at it and have a closer inspection. The problem is, I think, it's probably there's only one camera angle. So there's the initial camera angle because we're not in the Premier League and everything. There's only so much you can probably gain from...
I mean, in real time, I didn't think there was much in it, if I'm being honest. I thought it was fouled. I thought it was pulled back and tripped. I thought it should have a free kick just for that. In retrospect, when I've seen the replay of it, I think he's meant to do that. There's no doubt in my mind that he's put his foot down with some force. It's not as if he's... If you're going to land on someone's head... You sort of pull out. To me, it looked like he slammed his foot down pretty hard. Mm. They were, again, in the first half, I noticed they were talking a lot to one another. So whether there was a bit of afters or befores even going on there, I don't know. I couldn't say. But they definitely had some verbals with each other during the match. Now, I believe, from what I see, it looked like he'd done that on purpose. And he's got form.
Yeah, the thing is, Ming, there's a number of things I think sort of... bring it sort of out into the open. Obviously, there's the fact that he did Ibrahimovic a number of seasons ago counts against him. I think the picture that Oliveira put up online of him with the bare cuts really does kind of bring an emotional element into it because that is a pretty gruesome injury to be having on a football pitch, even if it is sort of accidental or deliberate or otherwise.
I wonder what studs he had. It looked like razor blades.
Yeah, really.
His face up.
Yeah, it is like surgery, isn't it, almost? It's amazing. If you're squeamish, don't look at it, basically, is my advice on that. In terms of my opinion on whether he meant it or not, the slow motion one looks so much worse than the actual full, the quick time, sort of real time sort of version. I'm kind of minded to give him the benefit of the doubt in a way, purely because I don't think it really does Reading any, you know, it doesn't really affect us as a team whether
it's going to make no difference
10 games or whatever. So in that sense, I kind of remove it. In a sense, also, I don't know if this upsets Reading fans in a way, whether you can draw comparisons to the Hunt on Cech thing, because that is a case of only you can only really know what went through the player's head if you're the player sort of thing. You can't necessarily go back and say...
Do you know what? I remember when I'd done this show years ago and I used to present it and that incident would come up. And I still say to this day, and it's controversial, right, that was a penalty to Reading. Because if you look, Cech catches Hunt's foot and then Hunt falls over and catches him in the head. Reading should have had the free kick. So that should have been a penalty. Although he did make contact with his head, I still say that was an accident, but he was fouled.
Yeah, no.
By all means, check out the replay. I could be talking rubbish here, but I think that was a Reading penalty.
Yeah, and I've always thought that the Hunt thing was an accident because at the end of the day, you know, it's a contact sport and a lot of these things happen and is dangerous. The The point I want to move on to now is the referee sounds like he really didn't have any kind of control on the game. And this is kind of symptomatic of that.
He was terrible.
If the referee doesn't have any control of the game, and if you are a player like Mings and you think, if he does think, I'm going to, you know, have him here, then he thinks that he can get away with it. And he has got away with it in that sense.
Their number six should have been sent off during this game. He got booked, and then probably about 5 minutes later, I think it was Rinomota, he pulled him back as he went past him, which is a yellow card every day of the week. But because he'd been booked, he didn't want to send him off. If he'd have done that, it would have been a different slant on the game. Obviously, they'd have had 10 men. We could have gone on to win the match. I just think the referee was poor the whole game. He booked people when he shouldn't. He stopped the game far too quickly when he could have let play go.
And didn't actually stop the game for the Oliveira thing as well.
And he missed this incident. Yeah. I thought he was poor all round, to be fair. And he dropped his yellow card on the pitch and was around 20 minutes without it. So.
Yeah, there was a couple of dives as well. I think there was one dive for the Villa player, and then about 30 seconds later, Reading ran up the other end and had a bit of a penalty claim, and he thought, oh, I better even things up here. And he booked, I think it was Oliveira he booked then for a dive that probably wasn't.
I did, and I think that's what went against him in this incident. I think because he went down a bit easy, and again, I say he was bald, but he went down a bit easy, and then someone's landed on him. I bet that's why he didn't give Reading a free kick, because he thought he's gone down a bit easy again.
Yeah. Before we move on then, one defeat in four, two clean sheets and 5 points in that. Current relegation thoughts?
Well, it's relegation form still, isn't it? I mean, of the odd draw here and there, although it's an improvement, we chucked... Wow, the amount of games we chucked away this year is frightening, really, for winning positions. The Bolton game's probably more disappointing than anything just because we were leading up into injury time and the game management wasn't good enough, really. This one, you feel like it's a good result because obviously it's Aston Villa, but let's face it, Aston Villa are not one of the top sides in this league, and you can tell that by their league position. So it's relegation form, but I said I'm still filled with hope, and it's not as if Rotherham have got too far away from us and we've got to blame still. Looking at that side on Saturday, I think if that team gets relegated, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, when it comes to the next three or four games we have, it depends. If you win two of them, you look back on these last 2 points and say, you know, they're good points. We stabilised a lot of the team. We worked out the tactics, etc., etc. If we go and lose four in a row now, these 2 points are terrible because they're the missed opportunities.
I think there's a lot of quality in that side now. There's a lot of players that are good footballers. Whether they've got the steel or not, time will tell. But it's relegation form, unfortunately. But I think, I really do now believe that they can turn this round and win a couple of games on back-to-back.
Yeah, well, Sheffield Wednesday up next, and we'll be talking about that a little later in the show. Now we're going to go on to News Bites and round up the transfer deadline day and what else has been going on around the other football teams of Reading Football Club.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So for those of you who caught our deadline day show with Wim and Becky, it is online as its own podcast and on Facebook Live. We had to kind of cut a lot of the podcast bits out of it because the audio quality wasn't so great for our return to video, and you know, apologies for all that. But let's just have a quick roundup of what's gone on then. The ins for the January transfer window: Ajaria, Baker, Miazga, Martinez and Oliveira, all on loan. Outs: Axel Andreasen, Adi Popper, Pella Clemen, Dave Edwards, Darren Sidowell, Ben House, Sam Smith, Gabriel Osho, Thiago Aloy, Leandro Bacuna, David Myler and Mark McNulty. A lot of those on loan, a lot of those are youngsters, but the squad is quite small, a bit smaller now, with those loanies still coming in. Overall thoughts on the window?
I think good. I think very good. I think a lot of people were disappointed that the players we've got in are on loan, but it's very difficult to sign top players of their level when you're in a relegation zone in a championship. So whether they've got sort of deals to come next year, as long as we stay up, I don't know. But definitely the five that have come in are better, an improvement anyway, on what we had already, I believe. And going out, I don't think there's any surprises there, really. A lot of these have been fringe players for a good 18 months. The only two you can really look at is Laurie and Bacuna. Laurie, I'm disappointed to see go, although he was booed on his debut for Sporting.
Yeah, they didn't do very well. I think they lost to Benfica, didn't they?
He was sat on the bench, and when his name got called, they booed him because he left in some sort of cloud when he left to go to Liverpool.
No, that's their problem now. We didn't have to.
So he didn't have a particularly good start to his return. But I'm sad to see him go because I think he's a good footballer. Bacuna, not sad to see him go. I know a lot of people have said they were quite surprised to see him leave. I've said on this show, been up before, I think that when the going gets tough, Bacuna either gets sent off or starts kicking the ball out of play. I didn't rate him much. I don't think he's a massive loss. And I think £4 million, you've really got to snap someone's hand off.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we made £5 million quid plus out of that transfer window, which, as you say, being a championship relegation team is not bad at all. And yeah, I think Ilori and Bacuna, they've been regular parts of teams that haven't been particularly good. So moving them on, hopefully bringing players, and the team becomes a little bit better from it.
Yeah, you need to shake it up. And I think sometimes, especially when I was younger, I used to get disappointed when certain players leave. I know I liked Laurie. Do I really think he's going to be a massive loss to us? No. I never really liked Bakuna anyway. Do I think he's going to be a massive loss to us? Certainly not. And for everybody else, I mean, we've hardly seen him anyway, but no, he's not good enough for this league. We've seen enough of that. And Mailer as well seems like he's more trouble than he's worth. Not just from Reading's perspective, when he's been at Ireland and other clubs have moved him on pretty swiftly, so there's obviously something wrong with his character. He's pretty good at FIFA from what I hear, but other than that, I don't think he's really contributed much to anything.
Yeah, well, I actually quite enjoyed on deadline day, him and McNulty went out for a fry up on the morning, and the dietary choice was already a bit of a sign as to, you know, McNulty having pancakes and bacon on in mid-season was interesting, but also had a little check as to whether they were in a cafe in you know, Edinburgh or Coventry or something like that, and it turned out they were in Ascot, so it wasn't too irregular.
I think the other thing to look at as well is the structure going forward. I mean, they've got five players on a loan. It's obviously very short. I can't imagine they're signing any of them. You might get them next year on loan again if you're lucky. The goalkeeper's already said he thinks he's gonna be Arsenal number two when he goes back, so yeah. We can see much of him. And for the players coming out, I think we're really edging our bets. You know, we've sort of sent them out on loan. If we get relegated, will these be good League One players? I think you'd have to say yeah, they probably would be. So I think they're planning for both either the Championship or the League One. They've not sold anyone particularly except for the two we just mentioned, and the others can come in with more experience.
Yeah, if we stay up and we can sign Nelson Oliveira or you know, Miazga in an ideal world or something like that, then great. If we go down, then we don't have to worry about paying the wages, which is probably a bit of a bonus. Tyler Sten Player of the Month nominees have been announced. Liam Moore, John Swift, Rinomota and Aluko are the January nominations. Out of those four, which would you jump on?
I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's Rinomota. I think he's been excellent since he's come into the side.
In a number of positions.
He makes a difference wherever he is. He's such a good player. And I think the other three have been sort of, Moore's always steady, but Swift and Luka are normally inconsistent. I don't think they've been much different over the last three or four matches.
Yeah, well, I think Luka's probably going to be a better shout for February than he is for January, because hopefully, you know, we'll see him actually start more than one or two games. And if he gets a bit of consistency in terms of selection, that might egg him on a little bit in terms of producing on the pitch. But
ironically, I was listening to Radio Barch this week, and they were saying about how since Gomez came in, Luka's been better. And Aidy Williams said that he couldn't have been any worse, and any sort of improvement would have made him look half decent. I don't think you can disagree with that.
Yeah, no, it is a decent point, to be fair, and especially in a team that can't really score goals, as soon as you've got a player who looks like he's a bit spark about him, and he has scored a goal. Yeah, he's standing head and shoulders above the rest.
He has scored, and when I got to work this week, the guy I worked with said exactly what I thought. He said, Aluko really struggles to shoot. If he shoots, normally he scuffs it. And I think, in general, that's what happens. I think he had three or four opportunities to shoot this week, and again, he scuffed all of them.
Yeah, well, when he connects well, like against QPR the end of last season, he bangs him in, but it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
quick roundup of the other teams then. Not brilliant, really. The women lost 3-0 at home to Arsenal. That was on the BBC Red Button the other weekend. It was quite tight, actually. I did watch the second half until a very gifted late penalty to Arsenal made it 2-0, then 3-0. They had their FA Cup tie postponed. They'll travel to Yeovil on Sunday the 10th. Company mid-table comfort, sixth place, which I think they want to be doing a bit better than that, but at the very least not got any kind of relegation worries for Reading women this season. The under-23s lost 1-0 at Sunderland, who are bottom of the Premier League 2. Reading are now third, 3 points off the top, host Newcastle on Friday 15th, and the under-18s just keep losing, basically. 4-0 loss to Leicester and 2-1 to Brighton in the last couple of weeks. They play Spurs on the 23rd and are 10th in the Premier League under-18 division. So keep an eye on those. And there's actually a bit of a gap now. I think maybe they're doing their GCSEs or something. The under-18s, under-23s don't have too many games in the next couple of weeks. So we'll visit them in the meantime and jump on now to the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Okay, mailbag. Anyone who wants to get in touch, as always, can go to the Tarlhurst End Twitter, Facebook, and thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Our email to get in touch and tell us your thoughts, opinions, anything on the show as well, any questions. We're always happy to answer and take in any feedback. And we start this week with Waldemar Januszak, friend of the show, who says, simples, how long a ban should Tyrone Mings get? I'd make it life. The Ibrahimovic stamp was bad enough. And Reading FC Bible adds on that, opinions on the Mings and Oliveira incident. We have kind of covered that in the earlier parts, so we'll move on. And the Bible also says, how many points do we need to survive? I think in the Championship they say about 50, but this year it doesn't seem like it's going to need to really be that high.
No, it's very similar to last year, really, where Reading has sort of been poor results-wise and no one seemed to pull away from them too far. To the point we've only won one game for, quite some time.
Yeah, 5-30 we've won this year was the whole season, and that is just terrible.
And we're 1 point out of getting out of relegation, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't think we need that many points, but I think the big games are obviously the ones when we played teams down the bottom.
Yeah, well, we had that last week and we dropped 2 points in the last minute. Elvis Royal says, do we now all agree Blackett is our best left-back and should be left in that position whenever fit? The left-back thing for me is just a case of pick one and stick with it, basically. Is if you develop some kind of consistency, then in an ideal world, that will kind of sort itself out.
I don't know why he doesn't play Blackett. I don't get it. I think he's cut the mistakes out that we see a lot of last year, the little switch-offs that he used to have. I think he's put in quite a few decent crosses this year that we've scored from. I'm surprised he doesn't start every week, especially he's left-footed and he's more experienced than the others.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think moving the Adom over to left-back and then forcing Renamoto in or putting Gunter in, I don't think you really improve the team then.
No, it's just shoehorning for the sake of it, isn't it? There's no need, I don't think. I don't think that Blackett's that bad that he doesn't warrant a place in the side.
Yeah, and arguably he's playing the best football he's ever played for Reading, which isn't brilliant, but it's still better than, you know, we've seen it.
Yeah, I just think he's a more experienced, sort of big, strong player. He's cut the mistakes out this year, so I don't see why he doesn't play, really, but hey.
Yeah, a troop of questions here on the same sort of subject. Gary saying, why aren't players shooting? I watched the highlights yesterday. At least 90% of the goals, this is across the general league, were from random shots and half chances around the edge of the box and just inside, through crowds of players, deflected off a defender, etc. We get into this position but waste it. Lee, on a similar topic, says, do we flatter to deceive? Going forward, yesterday was very similar to Stam. No pace or momentum to it. Players taking no individual responsibility and always looking to the pass rather than someone, or rather to shoot rather. Reading Bridge adds on that, is there a better formation that we could adopt to maximise options going forward? I'm still seeing a lack of incisive speed in attack, but I am just a big clumsy unit of a bridge, says Reading Bridge, the official Twitter account, or unofficial Twitter account of the Reading Bridge. In attack then, The shooting point is a good one, because I noticed in the Bolton game I caught on a bit of a dodgy online stream, and it seemed like Oliveira was happy to shoot from distance and no one else was. And it reminded me that for a while, I can't think of any players that we've had in the last, you know, 2-3 years that are happy to just take a punt from range. And I'm not sure, you know, whether I think that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't really work out where I lie on that.
Well, I don't know what the stats are about looking, but from my recognition, there's not... We haven't scored a lot of goals from the wings and midfield this year. We've very few. I mean, I don't know. Bakuna probably had 3 or 2. Renamoto, has he scored 1 or has he not scored yet? No idea.
I don't think
Kelly's
so.
Kelly's maybe scored a couple early in the season. But we don't... To the way we want to play football, you have to have players that can create stuff, create things in small areas. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to play quick tip-tap football, you've got to move the ball quickly in advanced areas. Now, we struggle to do that. And the next option is, if you're going to put the ball wide and get the ball in, you've got to fill the box with players. And we don't always do that either. And I think when
don't really have the players for it either.
No, but you can... Again, I go back to this quite a lot. Because if you watch Koppel football, they used to get the ball wide. And then when the cross came in, you'd have 4 or 5 players in the box.
Yeah.
If you've only got Oliveira stood there against 2 centre-backs, it doesn't matter how good you are.
Easy to defend.
Yeah, it's easy to defend, or you're in trouble from the beginning. And if you watch a lot of Reading's movement, especially in this game, they tend to get to a position where they're going to cross it, and then they cut it back. And normally they've got about 4 players stood on the edge of the box, and nobody gambles into the box and thinks, I'll try to see if I can just make a run and pull players away. And I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, but that was how Swift scored against Forest.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was how he scored.
He made
the opportunity, he ran into the box, got the ball back and scored. But that doesn't happen enough.
Yeah, no. It doesn't happen very often. And you think about, I can't imagine when I've seen Mo Barrow get on the end of a cross. Certainly Solly Aluko isn't someone who gets on the end of a cross. McCleary, you know, again, usually is the one putting it in. So yeah, I think the problem is that you're playing against championship defenders who generally kind of, even still these days, rely on their sort of physicality more than their, you know, defensive positioning and now. So that does open the opportunity for the sort of playing in tight spaces that I think we're working towards. But our players themselves are very kind of lightweight in Ajaria, Swift, probably Aluko as well, and Barrow, you can all say, get shrugged off the ball quite easily. And defenders don't need to worry that they're going to run into them and get nutmegged and beat, because they're not even that good skill-wise. So the defenders, you know, if you're playing John Swift, you watch 5 minutes of defending against him, you know, you barge his shoulders, you've won the ball off him. And I think that's kind of a big problem, that we're not quite skillful enough, we're not quite physical enough, and we're not quite, you know, daring enough as well. So it all kinds of moulds together, doesn't it?
Yeah, you just miss that little bit extra, don't you? That's what they miss in the final third, Reading. And either way, like you say, if you're going to put a cross in, you have to have a box that's full of people. And even from midfield, have we got anyone you think particularly good in the air, win a header? No, I don't think we have.
No, not so much. And one of the players, I'd probably say Yaku Mate for that. Simon Povey tweeted us saying, can we all agree that Mate has the turning circle of a double-decker bus?
He would know this because people that listened to this show years ago, Simon Povey's my mate and he was the Reading FC bus driver. He used to do confessions of the bus driver. So he would know what a turning circle of a double-decker bus was because he drove one for over 10 years.
He says, Mate's a nice lad, but after watching Oliveira 70 minutes, you realise how bad our other strikers are. I think it's a bit harsh on Mate, because I think he's that sort of player that you want in the penalty box. But again, maybe you have to play him with Oliveira, and then you have two players that maybe aren't the most mobile, and you have to sacrifice your system a lot. And
Mate, again, he's scored quite a lot of goals for this year when he's played, or he hasn't had as many minutes as he'd have liked. Whether Gomez likes him,
I think he's been a bit injured as well.
Yeah, because he's been injured mostly. But whether Gomez likes him, it doesn't appear that he's one of his favourites. Yes, Oliveira is definitely an upturn in ability up front. I mean, he has some lovely touches on Saturday. Not the quickest striker you're ever going to meet, but again, he needs supply. And Mate, although he's improved this year, he does look a bit clumsy, like a heavyweight boxer up front. I think Mate is good for what he's good at. If you want to bring a batteram on for the last 20 minutes, then great. But yeah, I'd have to agree that definitely Oliveira is a much better player than Mate.
Yeah, in terms of his all-round game, at least you can sense that Oliveira is worthy of the tag of a you know, pretty experienced championship goal scorer. He scored a decent amount of goals at this level, and there's always a reason for that at different clubs as well.
Yeah, I think someone said on Twitter yesterday that it was a good replacement for Kermigan. I think it is finally they have got a replacement, someone you can hit and play off, and you see that against Bolton. And bear in mind, the guy can't be match fit yet either, so there's probably more to come as long as he doesn't get kicked in the face anymore.
Yeah, I don't actually know if he's going to be fit for the trip to Sheffield Wednesday. He's had surgery on it, so he's all mended up and stitched up and everything. And he probably would need a mask.
Yeah, Phantom of the Opera mask, whatever they put on him.
Yeah, but otherwise I think he probably would be. He seems like the type as well that probably can battle through it. I don't think he's going to...
Get him on. He'll be all right.
Yeah, it'll be worth it. A few more questions then. Ralph says, good to see that Di was at the match. The Reading FC owner, the brother of the sibling pair that owned the team. Sure, he would have found Gomez and Howe more genuine than the other gonks, is the quote that Ralph uses, he's had to deal with at the club recently. On that Josh Buck's end, do you think Gomez has created a better mood around the club for players and or fans? And Tom says, are we in danger of getting carried away with the mood of the camp and losing sight of the fact we're becoming relegated? I take good results over good performances.
Exactly what we said earlier, isn't it? We've told that there's a great camaraderie back all of a sudden. It looks like he's moved a lot of the players out that maybe were causing him a bit of a problem. He's certainly done a lot in a short pace of time. He's a genius in the fact that he's convinced us all, well, most of us now, that we won't get relegated on relegation form. So he's obviously doing something right.
Yeah, I think the fact that Mr. Dye, the owner, was at the game is nice. You can't complain about that sort of thing. Gomez, he talks very well, and I think he considers his words quite a lot. When I'm going through editing in the little bit of things that he says to the club YouTube after the game, he takes a lot of pauses and considers his words very carefully. And I think he's worked out quite well how to talk to the media in a general sense, which is nice. But yeah, I think it is results at the end of the day, and I'm kind of interested, if we do get relegated, do you think that fans will turn on him, or do you think that the fans will think it's the club or the players?
Like I said, I hope we don't get relegated, but if we do get relegated, I hope they stick with him and just say this is our plan going forward, rather than these knee-jerk reactions, just get rid of the manager. Like I said, he's had a lot to do in a short space of time. When he came in, he was already in a relegation, so at least in a lot of relegation trouble. I think they've done everything they possibly can to get us out of it. Just they need to start getting some results.
Yeah, it is all there in the sense it's there. That go and do it now. And luckily it's only early February, so there is loads. Even if we're 1 point adrift with 3 weeks to go, it's still there.
I mean, even the chairman, I mean, you can't complain. I don't care if he doesn't turn up to matches. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. It wouldn't bother me if he never came all season.
Mm.
But when they needed backing, you need the chairman to back you. And I think he's done that. I think last year, I mean, I know it was a bit of a flop, but they had £7 million to pay for Sonia Luku. Yeah, what was the year before last? They've done that. This year, they've brought them five players in from top clubs. You can bet your life they're on good wages. There's no way they're paying them peanuts. And they've shipped out the players that he wanted to get rid of. And I think he's been back. So other than that, what else can you do as a chairman?
Yeah.
Buy the players yourself.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do, in the sense that you put the players on the pitch. If they miss an open goal, then that's not because you haven't invested in them, it's because they're just not bad good players.
And not only that, the backroom staff, I mean, he's changed all that as well. They've done everything they possibly can to stop us getting relegated. And if we do, I think you'd have to look at the players and say, well, it's your fault, really.
Yeah, last couple of questions then. Tom, you're saying, out of the current loan crop, who would you like to keep? Baker, Miazga, Martinez. For me, assuming that Chelsea want to sell as it's part of their financial model, and if a place on Arsenal's bench isn't more attractive to Martinez than the unknown of the Championship. Maitre Edit saying, who stays at the club and who leaves? If we stay up slash if we go down. Let's focus on the loanees then. I think if we go down, we don't get any of them.
Simple fact. Yeah, we won't get any of them.
If we stay up, I think getting the Chelsea ones is always going to be difficult. Even if they do change the loan system and limit the amount of players you can loan out, Chelsea and, to an extent, Arsenal and Liverpool, when it comes to Martinez and Ajaria, they've got so much money, they can have these players just sitting in the under-23s and pay them 40 grand a week.
Yeah, if
they're going to sell them, they're going to ask for upwards of £5 million.
I mean, we've discussed this before with Chelsea. I think what they do as a club and to young players, I think, really is disgusting. I think they keep far too many. They let them rot abroad, and then when they bring them back, they sort of slip down the leagues. Whether you can say, well, they weren't good enough, or would they be better suited to play in Championship football, you know, or lower Premier League football? Because they do stockpile them, don't they? They've got hundreds.
Yeah. Michael Hector is the classic example of a player who left the team, you know, for about £4 million or something. Has just been, you know, if he'd have stayed at Reading, he'd have had exactly the same career because he'd still be playing in the Championship. He'd still be probably first team regular.
Yeah. And he might have even kicked on. He might have even sort of been at a sort of lower Premier League side now.
So
they do it quite a lot. It's a shame. Will they make it to Chelsea? I don't think Baker will. I think we've seen enough of him already.
He's 23, 24. I don't think that's sort of age that you can rely on players to step up.
At Leeds, they didn't like him particularly. My mate's a Leeds fan. He goes to a lot of games. He said he wasn't well thought of. From what I've seen of him, he looks like maybe he's about his level. So you might end up with him if you want him. I don't know if we would. As for the others, again, I think they might be a little bit too good for us.
Yeah, I think Miazga, if he is, you know, going to keep this sort of form that he showed early on, then he's probably set up for a Premier League loan next season, sort of along the lines of Ake. Lower Premier League team buys him, and that's how they do it.
Yeah, it's either that or go out to Germany or Holland or play in the top leagues somewhere else in Europe. That's what they normally do, so I'd be surprised if we got him. And Martinez, again, he's too good for us.
Oliveira, I think, probably is the best shout.
He is probably the only one you might get, but the worry is with him, if he does go on a run of scoring in the next couple of weeks, then
he's suddenly worth £8 million quid, isn't
he? Yeah, we can't afford him or we go somewhere else.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. I think if the idea that Oliveira scores 10 goals in the next 3 weeks or 3 months and then we can't afford him and we stay up is probably a risk worth taking, really. So
that's the risk they're prepared to take, you know?
Yeah, I can't blame him for taking that. So let's round off the show then with a quick look at any other business for the Sheffield Wednesday game.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, 3 p.m. at Hillsborough is the fantastic advent of Steve Bruce's first game in charge of Sheffield Wednesday at home, and Reading are the visitors. And this is probably a bad time to play them, all things considered, because they started the season pretty averagely, Sheffield Wednesday, and now they've won only 5 at home in the league all season, but 3 of those have come in the last 5 games. So they've picked up under the sort of caretaker managers they had. They're ready for Bruce. They got a late win at Ipswich on the weekend. And now they're in theory, kicking on.
Yeah, and Steve Bruce has been around the block quite a lot in the Championship. He knows how to get a team into a decent position to go up. I think, it's probably a bad time to play him. But it's a bad time for them to play us as well. That's where you got to look at it. And I think if we're going to win an away match before the end of the season, this is as good of an opportunity as any.
It may as well be, yeah. We've won only once away all season. There's been 7 draws and 7 losses. So we're not, you know, always losing. We're more likely to not lose than lose, if that makes sense. 8 not loses to 7 losers and 3 draws in the last 5 on the road.
And we haven't took many beatings away from home, have we? I mean, it's been the odd 1 or 2 or 3 goals in it, but I don't think, looking at our away form, we don't get hammered.
Yeah, well, that is the official stat on that is that we've not lost by more than 1 goal away in the Championship since Swansea on October 27th, and even that was an 84th minute second goal. And a couple of weeks before that, we got trounced by West Brom, who are the high scorers. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right in that sense. And Sheffield Wednesday are very narrow in their wins, 1-0 wins in 3 of their last 4 games in all competitions. So I don't think it's going to be particularly high scoring, but, you know, we definitely got a chance.
Yeah, I think we have. And I think it's a good opportunity to get back-to-back wins that we're going to get. You know, if we can beat Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, then we've got opportunity to beat Rotherham as well. And we've got Blackburn as well.
Blackburn coming up, yeah. Yeah, so, and I think those games are ones that you want to get a bit of form going into.
They're winnable. I'd be disappointed if we didn't win, well, at least get 4 points out of them 3 matches as a minimum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk predictions then. For Bolton, myself and Johnny both got 1-1, which, you know, was at least a bit of a silver lining for a late equaliser. Sim and Tom got draws versus Villa. The predictions are very, you know, 2-1s and 2-2s, quite high scoring, a lot of defeats in that as well. So at the moment, Wim is leading out on 24 points. Ollie and Handbags 23, Johnny on 22, then a bit of a drop down to myself on 17 points, Sim 15, yourself Wesley on 14, and Tom Crocker on 13 points.
I could go from champion to relegated, didn't I?
You'll be down to the second tier Reading podcast prediction leagues. What are your thoughts on Sheffield Wednesday then, in terms of what will actually happen?
I think I go draw. I think I play safe with a draw. I think it's winnable, but whether we score enough goals to win the match, I'm not convinced of. But I can't see them scoring too many against us, so I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Yeah, well, I'm tempted by the one. I think I'm, having been pessimistic and said we'll lose to Villa, I think I'm going to swap it round a little bit and say for Sheffield Wednesday that we'll nick a 1-0 win, because Sheffield Wednesday aren't a brilliant team. And when you have these teams that are on runs of form, like I say, they've won three of their last four, all 1-0, that can only last so long. And sometimes, you know, maybe we'll get a good refereeing decision or something like that will happen. It needs to happen at some point, because we've got to start, you know, picking up points on the road is going to be a really big asset if we are going to stay up. So I think this is a good chance to get a victory. Hopefully we've got Oliveira fit. And then, yeah, we'll go and play our game. And I can't imagine Steve Bruce is going to play much of a possession game himself. So we'll probably have most of the ball. And then it just depends if we can defend well and get the ball over the line.
Yeah, just make it count. That's the thing. It's all right having the ball, but you've got to put the ball in the net. And we're struggling with that a little bit. But yeah, I think this is winnable. But yeah, in this case, I'm going to go for a draw.
Excellent. Well, we'll be back next week then to discuss that. And then I think we've got a free midweek as well next week. And then the week after, we got a midweek game, or is it maybe next week?
It's Blackburn's the 13th. I think that's next Tuesday, is
it? Okay, yeah. So we'll be back before that, because it's the Wednesday, actually, the Blackburn game. So we'll be back in between those two games then. Ollie will be with the weekend preview before the Sheffield Wednesday game. And that is that then. So thank you very much, Westy, for popping by on this very chilly Tuesday.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll be back in due course with a review of a Sheffield Wednesday game that really could go either way. And the fact that we're thinking that, in a sense, is a bit of a positive, because previously we were thinking that there's absolutely no chance.
Like I said, I think Gomez has worked his magic on everybody.
whether it's a false dawn or not, we'll see. Come on, you arse.
Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems it's on you.